Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I would prefer to have a bipartisan approach to solve this problem. If that's not possible, I and my Republican colleagues in the House are prepared to move on our own.
This is the first time in 19 years that I feel that something that can be done very simply is being held hostage for a very high stakes game.
John Boehner and Dianne Feinstein there. And folks, fasten your seatbelts. With political gridlock and just 8 days to go before the debt ceiling deadline, it could be a heck of a ride between now and next Tuesday as we wonder whether the government will actually begin to default on its debts, an unthinkable act that has never before happened in U.S. history. The current intransigence seems to, and this is just the current intransigence, let's say the latest intransigence, seems to revolve around a pretty small deal to raise the debt ceiling through the 2012 elections versus a very small deal to force another decision point during the campaign. None other than Ben Smith from Politico starts us off today to help us understand all this and maybe even how to get unstuck. I don't know if even Ben Smith has that much wisdom, but hi, Ben.
Yeah, nothing on the latter question, but
we'll
I'm not
see.
The only one.
We'll see. We'll get there. And I know this can change by the hour, so am I still right about the short-term deal versus the very short-term deal?
Yes. I mean, the short-term deal wouldn't be that short-term. It would extend the debt limit for a couple of years, crucially past the 2012 election. The shorter-term deal would be 6 months to 9 months, something like that. That's what the House is pushing for, and would kind of this crisis would then repeat itself, basically, in that period of time. And in theory, some sort of committee, some people are calling it a super Congress of very special members of Congress, would figure out exactly what to do and present it to the rest of Congress for a vote. And John Boehner is expected to unveil some kind of framework, basically, this afternoon at 2 p.m.
And even that pretty short deal that you say isn't that short because it goes past the 2012 election, I mean, it's still quite short compared to the 10-year grand bargain with all the changes in the tax code and Medicare and everything else that Boehner and Obama keep coming close to.
Yeah, it's certainly not the sort of great, really kind of deal that would reshape the political landscape that both of those guys at times really seem to want, although you could imagine a two-year deal that did make some pretty large-scale and dramatic changes. And I think that's sort of what they were hoping for at this point.
Who gets the election year advantage if we have another moment of brinkmanship like this during the campaign if they do go for that very short deal?
Republicans believe that they get the advantage because they have the good fortune of not having to make any hard decisions or be in office, but they can grandstand while President Obama's forced to, at some point, you know, raise the debt. No, and it's something that, you know, voters do not like the idea of raising the debt ceiling, increasing the limit on your credit card. It's sort of the obvious metaphor.
But Republicans are in office too. They control the House. If they went back to this moment where I think everybody looks kind of bad, and I'll get your opinion, but I think Republicans look really bad because Obama looks like the compromiser and Americans like compromise. It could come back to haunt the Republican House majority. They hope they'll still have a House majority if this takes place again during the campaign, couldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I guess I was talking about the Republican presidential candidate.
Ah.
The Republican House leadership absolutely could look terrible, could look basically political, like that. You know, they're the kids stomping away from the table where Obama's seeking a grand bargain, seeking bipartisan compromise. But for the same reason, they seem likely to win this. There's a perception, really, on all sides, as you know, a sort of Democrat said to me earlier, that you know that ultimately Democrats have to accept whatever comes from the insane asylum that is the House. And there's a sense among all three parties, and this is a great advantage to the House leadership, that the House leadership can't control its rank and file the way the Senate can, the way the president, you know, gets to make his own decisions, and so that everybody else will be stuck with whatever can pass a very conservative House.
And by the way, I have the wires up on one of my computers here, and this just crossed the AP. It says President Barack Obama's reelection campaign has postponed several fundraisers because of the ongoing talks over the raising the debt limit. Campaign officials say Obama had to cancel plans for fundraisers in California and Washington State in recent weeks, along with an event at the New York home of film mogul Harvey Weinstein. It says today Obama will skip two Washington fundraisers that had been on his schedule. One of the events was canceled, and Vice President Joe Biden will attend the other. The fundraising postponements were first reported by the Chicago Sun-Times. Does that tell us anything about political posturing, or is it just that he's really got to devote such full-time attention that he can't attend these things?
Well, I think it tells you that the Republican criticism of the moment, which is that he's just concerned about getting this done, pushing this past his reelection, is something he's worried about. He had, as you said, had the political high ground. But that is a reality of this conversation, that Democrats really want to get it past 2012. And that's not that year isn't just a pure coincidence. And so that's a point that Republicans are trying to make. And so Obama is trying to sort of hold on to his high ground, and to the sort of sense that he's the one who wants to make a sort of bipartisan bargain that's good for the country, politics be damned.
Listeners, you want to do about 10 minutes of debt ceiling calls here? Democrats, welcome. Republicans, welcome. Independents, really welcome. Are there any independents left? Yes, I know. There are more and more independents all the time in this country. Who's got the high ground here, Indies? If you maybe voted for Obama in 08 but didn't like his health reform, who's the good guy here to you, if anybody? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for anyone on the debt ceiling moment of chicken, I guess it is, between now and next Tuesday. 212-433-9692 or post to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, as we talked to Ben Smith from Politico. And Ben, honestly, I've been doing this a long time. You've been doing this a long time. I don't think I've seen anything quite like this ever. We've had gridlock and polarization before, but here, with the stakes so high, walking voluntarily into being Greece, or at least a little bit, if that's what happens, the positions on the tax issue seem completely hardened over the question of some tax changes to help reduce the debt or none at all. Have you ever seen something this big, this locked up, over some compromise or none at all?
Nothing comes to mind. But on the other hand, the notion that legislators can't move until things get really terrible and there's a real crisis is not something. The government shut down in the 1990s. We haven't hit that point yet. Judd Gregg, the former senator, said the other day that politicians will need a weekend of drama to get this done, and that it'll take artificial drama to get closure past the House on this. And I think it just seems to be a truth of politics that a lot of these guys' positions aren't going to be hardened until there's a sense of real crisis, which is clearly impending, but maybe has not quite hit yet.
And how impending is it? I haven't looked at the market wires. I should just click on that while we're talking, but maybe you've looked, because the big fear going into today, 6 business days before the debt ceiling deadline, was that this was the day the markets were going to really start trading stocks and bonds down out of fear from the uncertainty, because markets anticipate things. Is it happening?
Not too... The Asian markets were down, a bit less than a percentage overnight, and looks like the Dow is down 0.5% so far this morning. But there isn't the sort of crash that some people worried about. I think I think is because dysfunction and gridlock must have at some point been priced into the market at this point. And I think they don't really believe there's going to be a default.
Let's take a call, Mike in Howard Beach. You're on WNYC. Morning, Mike.
Hello, I have 2 points. First of all, the Democrats were in total control of the Congress until Election Day 2010, and they intentionally refused to pass a budget. I wonder why. I wonder if they thought they could possibly blame the Republicans down to the last minute in general. And the other thing is, let's say we do raise the debt ceiling. Is it the position of the Democrats we just keep on doing that until our percentage of debt to GNP rivals Greece and we all go under? When do we take a stand?
Ben Smith, a lot of Americans are asking that question.
I think that's why what the Republicans right now are doing has so much resonance, is, let's not worry so much about the details and even the question of default and international credit markets. But if you think the government is spending too much, you got to pull the plug. At some point, you've got to bite the bullet, and this seems like as good a time as any. That's sort of the sense.
And I wonder how closely you've been watching the polls, because I think the predominant expert opinion is that this is money that has already been spent by the U.S. government, or let's say promised, because it's been borrowed. And so you have to raise the debt ceiling now just so, by law, the government can pay back, you know, the debt that's coming due. That's treasury bonds that are maturing, other things that the U.S. government has already borrowed, and it's got to make these payments starting August 2nd. So that's kind of, you know, the level-headed, rational analysis of why this, in a bookkeeper's world, is required to be done, and it's not political. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the early polls that I saw in the months leading up to this breakneck moment were that like 80% of Americans agreed with Mike and Howard Beach and thought, no, I'm not for raising the debt ceiling. It was more kind of informal interpretation of what raising the debt ceiling means. Borrow more money? No, the government's borrowed enough money. So you have the technical understanding versus the popular understanding. Are they moving closer?
Yes, I think that the popular understanding, you know, there's this tension, right, between we don't want to raise the debt limit and we don't want a crisis, we don't want gridlock. I mean, I think there's also a political reality, which is that the Republicans control one of three branches of, you know, one of two houses of Congress and don't control the White House. And so and at the moment are demanding everything exactly their way. And there's sort of a political reality that that's just not how it's going to work. And I think that's something that also is sort of percolating through the system right now with Boehner, you know, without putting it in those terms, trying to make that case to his members.
Gene in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hello, Gene.
Hello. Hi. First of all, I want to say that Obama the other day on TV, he really clarified exactly what was going on. And in fact, the debt has been incurred over the last 10 years. And two, the Republicans are coming across as such bullies. It's like watching two kindergartens in the playground. This is mine. This is mine. It's ridiculous. So I prefer that if they don't compromise, if they don't want to increase tax revenues, then let the country go into default. And I'm willing to pay the higher price because I think it's awful what's going on.
Gene, thank you. And what would the higher price be, Ben? I mean, let's imagine the unimaginable. The U.S. defaulting on some of its debts. What actually happens August 3rd, and how much uncertainty is there around that?
Well, there is a lot. I mean, what happens August 3rd is that basically the government has to start doing triage. I mean, it's, you know, people have thought this through, and, you know, it's you know, do you pay? And there's, you know, some people are saying, well, you know, are we really going to pay our debts to foreign creditors before we pay for the health benefits of our senior citizens, right? I mean, so there would become this furious domestic argument over which bills you pay first with your dwindling cash, because you could suspend what a lot of Republicans say, you know, just stop spending domestically, keep paying your creditors, you don't have to default. I mean, the politics of you know, paying off Goldman Sachs before you pay somebody's Social Security check or dismal. Everyone is, I think, hoping it doesn't come to this, and, you know, and so not taking these possibilities too seriously. But and then down the road, you know, if Treasury bonds are downgraded, you know, and lose their, you know, get a AA rating, it becomes more expensive to borrow. I don't have the figures at hand on exactly how much more expensive, but mm-hmm. I mean, but psychically, the idea of you know, America getting downgraded is obviously pretty dismal.
And it is kind of a double-edged sword with respect to debt, isn't it? When we talk about raising the debt ceiling and the technical reality that this money is already owed and we have to raise the debt ceiling so we can pay back money by August 2nd, it means we're borrowing just to pay back money we've already borrowed, correct?
Well, we're borrowing to pay our expenses going forward. I mean, you know, the government has income and expenses, and I think that, as I just said, you know, there's going to be a debate over what you pay if you stop borrowing. But I think it's, you know, it's to pay the cost of running the country. One of those costs is paying back debt, but it's not the only one.
Hillary in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Hillary.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. For one thing, Boehner saying that Obama is only concerned about re-election when he positions himself on this debt issue is totally the pot calling the kettle black, because obviously all of Boehner's crowd have made all these pledges to their constituents, and there's a reason for that. They want to be re-elected, unlike Bennett of Utah. But the other thing about the debt, about the agreement being short-term...
In other words, Bennett looked too moderate, and he got ousted in a Republican primary.
Right, because he compromised on something one day, which is, you know, what they're very much against. But the other thing about the short-term versus the long-term solution, I think it's... It can't just be about the election. It has to be that we can't just keep being paralyzed. We need a long-term solution. It can't just keep happening this way. It's unbelievable.
Hillary, thank you. And on that, Ben, you know, Boehner and Obama seem to go round and round, or at least they have several times now in the last few weeks, on a grand 10-year bargain that includes some tax increases, which is, you know, bigger government poison to many Republicans, President Norquist, or however much power he actually has, or a stopgap deal that only cuts spending, unfairness poison, that kind of poison to many Democrats. And here they both are in the last few days, Boehner and Obama.
I know the president's worried about his next election, but my God, shouldn't we be worried about the country?
It is hard to understand why Speaker Boehner would walk away from this kind of deal. And frankly, if you look at the commentary out there, there are a lot of Republicans that are puzzled as to why it couldn't get done.
So why, Ben? How do they keep getting this close? It's not like Obama said, like Boehner says, no, I'm not interested in this 10-year grand bargain that has a lot of this and a little of that. He's saying he is interested, and then he walks away at the last minute twice now.
I mean, it's not complicated. The basic issue is that Boehner can't do it because he has too many members who either are Tea Party, you know, recently elected kind of revolutionaries, or who worry about a primary from that kind of person.
So why does he tiptoe up to the line? Because he thinks maybe those Tea Partiers can actually be brought along?
I mean, ultimately they'll have to be. Ultimately, there's going to have to be some sort of deal that passes, and he knows it, and you know, presumably virtually everybody in the House knows it. But it's his caucus is sort of the key moving piece here.
So what's going to happen next? I gather Reid, the leader in the Senate, and Boehner, the leader in the House, have competing stopgap bills that they might both bring to their floors?
That's right. And I think, you know, because the House Republican caucus is sort of the crucial piece here, is perceived that way, Boehner's framework, I think, it's more not a piece of legislation yet, which he's going to unveil it too, and you know, one place he might compromise, they're talking about forcing some sort of vote on the balanced budget amendment that might get weakened or watered down in some way, for instance, you know, but there's he's unveiling a framework at two, which will be his sort of, you know, half step towards some kind of compromise, I think. But
all right, we'll be watching. And Ben, I told you I was going to put you on the spot like this. Summon up all your Ben Smith wisdom and tell us how this is going to end.
Having conferred with some colleagues this morning, my guess is that Reid will pass and Obama will sign whatever they can get out of the House ultimately.
Whatever they can get out of the House ultimately, which would be a short-term stopgap measure with no tax increases, only spending cuts, that makes them do this debate again during the 2012 campaign?
Yep.
Well, we'll see if Ben Smith's crystal ball is any better than his ability to bring them to yes on something bigger. Ben Smith from Politico, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, in the context of the Oslo massacre, how European multiculturalism is different from the American kind. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.